Okay. Well, good morning. We're starting a new series this morning on the topic of wisdom, and it's my privilege to really kick it off. At least I think it's my privilege to kick it off. I suspect that what they did was, when they were organizing this, they said, "Man, that Phil Menealy, he's kind of a wise guy. We'll get him to start it." So that's why I'm here. But next week, Pastor Dan Bolgi will be delivering the message. So now, in talking about wisdom, if we talk about wisdom, the theme verse for this week, for this series, is James 1:5. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. So that's James 1:5. And if we say, well, who do we know and what do we know about wisdom? The first person that comes to mind is Solomon. So we're going to look this morning at the life of Solomon. And if you want to look at 1 Kings chapter 3 is where we're going to start. I'll sort of range over different sections. That's why I actually brought my old-fashioned Bible, because I'm going to pick verses from different chapters to talk about, and it's easier to do that this way than on my phone. But 1 Kings chapter 3, starting in verse 5. Now, just remember who Solomon is or was. His father was David. King David was known as a man after God's own heart. David committed terrible sins, but he always repented. He always turned back to God. The main thing in his life was his walk with God. He was known as a man after God's own heart. Solomon was his son, and Solomon becomes the king. And in chapter 3, Solomon is now the king. So we'll start reading in verse 5. At Gibeon, Solomon had gone to this place, Gibeon, and that's where he was worshiping God. He was offering sacrifices. He was praying. He was because he was going to be king, and he was worshiping God. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream. And God said, "Ask for whatever you want me to give you." So this is the first of three times. We're going to look at three different times when God appears to Solomon. This is the first of the three, right? And Solomon answered, "You have shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You have continued this great kingdom, this great kindness to him, and have given him a son to sit on the throne this very day. Now, O Lord," now Solomon makes his request, "Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. I am only a little child, and I don't know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart." In the parallel passage in Second Chronicles 1, it's "give your servant wisdom." Give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern the great people of yours? So Solomon was worshiping God. And God comes and speaks to him and says, "You can ask for whatever you want." Solomon is humble before God. He recognizes his inexperience. He recognizes the challenges that he's going to face in governing Israel. Solomon's probably about 20 years old at this point. So when he says he's a young child, he's not that young, but he's inexperienced. He asks for a discerning heart in order to govern God's people and to judge between right and wrong, to have wisdom and knowledge. Solomon is asking for the most important thing he can ask for. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 9, verse 10, it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." Many of the Proverbs are attributed to Solomon, and it's possible he wrote this one. But you see, he's starting out with the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. He's humble before God. He's worshiping God. He's reverent. He's recognizing his own shortcomings and his needs, his humility. This lays the foundation for his wisdom. The beginning of wisdom is this reverence for God. It's also the starting place for us to gain wisdom. If we look at our verse, James 1:5, if any of you lack wisdom, well, that pretty much covers all of us. I mean, at one time or another, all of us have said, I don't know which way is up. I don't know which is left and which is right. I don't know what to do. So if any of you lack wisdom, that kind of covers all of us, and it covers Solomon. And it's the starting point for us to gain wisdom, is reverence before God, worship of God, humility before God. We need to recognize what we don't know. And compared to what God knows, that's a whole lot. But it's often the point that we will have to say, we have to recognize our own lack of knowledge, lack of understanding. And if I were to say, what is it that allows us to grow in wisdom throughout our lives, I would suggest it's probably this humility. And the people that I know who I would say have grown in humility throughout their lives, grown in wisdom throughout their lives, what quality do they share? It's humility. It's this fear of the Lord, this recognition that I don't know these things, but God does. So God is very pleased with this request from Solomon. So in verse 10, he says, so the Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, since you have asked for this, and not for long life, or not for wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked, both riches and honors, so that in your lifetime, you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in my ways and obey my statutes and commands as David your father did, I will give you a long life. So this is the first time God comes and speaks to him. And he didn't ask for wealth. He didn't ask for a long life. He didn't ask for vengeance on his enemies. He asked for wisdom. And God grants this request, just as it says in James 1, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God. And that's what Solomon does. And God grants it in great blessing. And in addition to that, he gives him great wealth. But there's a kicker in verse 14 when he says, if you walk in my ways. So keep that in mind. At the end of chapter 4, we read that Solomon is renowned for his wisdom. People come from all around because of his wisdom. And so his wisdom was very well known. In chapter 5 of 1 Kings, Solomon begins on the great project of his life. David had collected the materials to build the temple, a permanent temple for the people. And Solomon begins to build the temple. In 1 Kings chapter 5 through verse 9, he's building the temple. It's the plans, it's collecting the materials, it's putting it up, it's describing what it's like, and so on and so on. It's 1 Kings 5 through 9 is a description of what the temple was like. The temple was magnificent. It was all gold. It was glorious. It had gems of rare types. But more important than that, it was a national symbol for them, but more, even more important than that, most important of all, It was a meeting place between God and his people. It's where heaven and earth were coming together. It's where it's the people would come to God and God would come to the people. It's the single most important thing that could have happened. At the end of chapter 8, when Solomon prays to dedicate the temple, it's a really moving testament to God's faithfulness to them, to God's glory, to God's protection, to God's blessings on Israel. Solomon recounts all of these things. It speaks in depth about the responsibility of Israel in keeping the covenant and in God's faithfulness to his covenant. And the people worship, and the temple is dedicated at the end of chapter 8. Verse 66 of chapter 8, they blessed the king and then went home joyful and glad in heart for all the good things the Lord had done for his servant David and his people Israel. And in 1 Kings chapter 9, verses 1 through 9, God appears to Solomon a second time. When Solomon had finished building the temple of the Lord and the royal palace and achieved all he desired to do, the Lord appeared to him a second time. And God says to him, "You have done what I said. I've heard your prayer. I have consecrated this building." God says he will dwell in the temple. This is a great time. This is the high point of Israel's history. This is where they have a magnificent temple. They have peace with all their enemies. They have a king of great wisdom. And God is pleased to dwell with them. This is the high point. This should have been the beginning of the greatest time in Israel's history. Because this is the high point. They have it at this point, they have it all. We could stop here. And we could say, "And they all lived happily ever after." It'd be nice if we could stop here. It would be nice if life was like that. It would be nice if we said, "And we all lived happily ever after." That tends not to be the way our lives work out. And it wasn't the way Solomon's life worked out either. Because this is only the beginning. There have been warnings throughout this to Solomon. God's appearance to him earlier, David's words to him before he became king, there had been warnings. And in Solomon, in chapter 9, verse 6, God makes it very plain. "But if you or your sons turn away from me and do not observe the commands and the decrees that I have given you, and go off to serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land." And he goes on. God is very, very plain to Solomon. Look, you began in the fear of the Lord. You began in reverence and humility. But if you depart from that, there will be consequences. In this way, Solomon illustrates even more of the passage in James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 5, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask, and it will be given to you." Verses 6 through 8, Solomon was double-minded. "If any of you doubts, you should not expect to get these things." Solomon was double-minded. Double-minded meaning that he was trying to worship more than one thing at the same time. His heart was divided. He wasn't a man after God's own heart or a person after God's own heart. He had divided loyalties here. He was trying to serve two gods, two masters. You know, pick your illustration that you're most familiar with, because you know what this is like. He's trying to serve two masters. You get hints of this throughout and becomes very clear later on. But hints of this throughout. And here's where you can first get the hint of it. So it took Solomon 7 years to build the temple. If he started when he was 20 years old, approximately, he would have been about 27 when it was completed. Okay. Then he built a palace for himself. It also was glorious and grand, and it took him 13 years. And if you look in 1 Kings chapter 7, in some translations like the NIV, it says, however, it took Solomon, or in King James, but it took Solomon. In other translations, you don't always have the however or the but what you have instead is the hint that Solomon became more interested in a place for himself than in a place for God. He spent longer building his own palace, which was glorious and magnificent and had all the gold and jewels and so on, than he did building the temple of God. He'd become double-minded. He was trying to serve two different gods. He was fabulously wealthy because God had blessed him so much. And it appears that his affection was turning away from God. He'd been repeatedly warned about this by David, by God himself, not to embrace any other gods. But that's exactly what happened. In fact, you can go back much, much further and see these warnings. 250 or so years before this, the people were ready to enter the promised land. They were still in the wilderness. They had not entered the promised land. So there were no kings, no, you know, all of this. Moses is addressing them in the book of Deuteronomy. And in the book of Deuteronomy, the book of Deuteronomy is one Moses' final address to the people. So, and in Deuteronomy chapter 17, Moses says things like this. So when you get into the promised land and you decide that you want to have a king like all the other nations, here are some qualities that the king should not have. Here are things you should look for. Deuteronomy 17, verse 16. The king must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself or make the people return to Egypt to get more of them. In 1 Kings chapter 10, verses 26 through 28, we read that Solomon had 700 chariots and 14,000 horses. And he had gone to Egypt to get them. Exactly what Moses said, don't let the king do this. In Deuteronomy 17, verse 17, Moses said, he must not take many wives or his heart will be led astray. 1 Kings 11, King Solomon, verse 1, King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women. And he had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. Third, Moses said in Deuteronomy 17, verse 17, he must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. In 1 Kings chapter 10, it talks about how rich Solomon was. So rich that silver was treated just like an everyday rock. So, Moses had warned them about three things. Don't accumulate horses and chariots. That's prestige and power and so on. The king shouldn't have many wives. The king should not accumulate wealth to himself. 40 years ago or so, one of my mentors, somewhat older than me, said, our relationship with God, our Christian testimony, is most often compromised or undone by one of three things: money, sex, or power. And power could be control, could be desire for recognition, could take many different forms, but money, sex, and power. Those are the three primary weapons that Satan will use to compromise your walk with God. Now, Satan has more weapons than that, but those three work so well, he doesn't usually have to turn to any others. And if you think about people you know, maybe when you were in your 20s, there was someone who thought, you know, this person's really passionate for God. I really see them walking with the Lord. And you look around now and you say, where'd they go? Whatever happened to them? Well, you look at Christian leaders or well-known Christians that fall and are compromised. And it often comes down to one of these three things: money, sex, and power. Solomon could not control, or didn't want to control, his lust for power, recognition, fame, celebrity. Solomon didn't want to control his lust for women. Solomon didn't want to control his lust for money. And there are consequences. He began in the fear of the Lord, but the last half or three quarters of his life, he reigned for 40 years, and the temple was completed at 7 years. Other gods were also being worshipped. His heart had in fact been led astray. And in 1 Kings chapter 11, verses 9 to 13, God appears to Solomon a third time. And he says, starting at verse 6, actually, so Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely. That is, he was double-minded, as David his son had done. Verse 9, then God became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice before. Although he had forbidden Solomon to follow other gods, God did not keep the Lord's command. So what should have been the introduction of Israel's greatest period, in fact, becomes the time when they fall apart. During Solomon's life, God was faithful. He did not take the kingdom away. But as soon as Solomon died, the kingdom split into two. It all fell apart. He reigned for 40 years, but most of that time was squandered. He began in the fear of the Lord. He began in humility and reverence and awe of God. But he added so many other gods that the fear of the Lord appeared to apparently disappeared. So what do we know about the last years of Solomon? If we want to grow in wisdom throughout our lives, as Jesus did, you know, Luke 2:52, Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and favor with God and man. So if we want to grow in wisdom, and I think most of us would say we do, we don't just want to get old, we want to get wiser. We want our experiences to turn into greater understanding of who God is and how God works and so on. If we want that for our lives, what can we learn from Solomon? What do we know about his last years? Well, you could turn to the book of Ecclesiastes, although you don't really need to turn to it. Just I'll call your attention to the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes has been attributed to Solomon. It's not that the writer of Ecclesiastes is not actually named, but the church has always attributed it to Solomon. So it appears to be the writings of Solomon near the end of his life. If you've not read the book of Ecclesiastes, I really encourage you to do it, but I will warn you that it's not a lot of fun. The Wednesday morning women's Bible study in the spring did a study on the book of Ecclesiastes using a study guide from Dee Breston, a really good study, and I'm going to refer to something from this book in just a minute. So if you've not read Ecclesiastes, let me summarize it. It's an old man. Solomon was probably 60. I'll let you decide whether that was old or not. Solomon was an old man. He's looking back at his life, and he's explaining things to a younger person. It's the ultimate message of been there, done that. You know, we use that expression, been there, done that. But for Solomon, he really had been there and done that. He had been the wisest guy in the world. The wisest man, not the wisest guy. The wisest man in the world. He had been the richest man. People came from all over to see him. So he could really say, I've been there and done that. And as he looks at all of these things, he could say, I've achieved anything that you think is important. If you think this is important, I've achieved it. If you think this gives you meaning to your life, I know what it's like. Knowledge and learning, been there, done that. Wealth, been there, done that. Recognition, celebrities, all the pleasures of this life, professional accomplishments, anything that you want, Solomon could say, I know. Or maybe you're one of those, and I sort of maybe fall into this category of, well, the accomplishments don't mean that much to me. What really matters is that I worked hard for it. Solomon could say, yeah, I've been there, done that. And his conclusion was, it's all meaningless. It's all meaningless. All of those things are meaningless. Or in a wonderful phrase that will stick with you, I hope, for a long time, it's all just a chasing after the wind. Solomon is saying, yeah, I spent most of my life chasing after the wind. I began in the fear of the Lord. That was the beginning of wisdom. But then I spent most of my life chasing after the wind. And I squandered what God had given me. The book of Ecclesiastes ends this way. He's wrapping up. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. So he's getting to the end. Fear God. Keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether good or evil. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the completion, the end of wisdom. It begins and ends there. But Solomon spent his life chasing after the wind. I want to read from Dee Breston's study guide. She used a paraphrase by a writer named T.M. Moore. So while a paraphrase of Ecclesiastes. So while the verses from the NIV are up there, I'm going to read these same verses from T.M. Moore's paraphrase. So hear me out, my son, and I will speak you this one last thing. You want to know the way to have a full and happy life? I say to you that life is only in the Lord. You're searching everywhere to find some word of truth to set your mind at ease. What you are looking for is God. You're hoping to discover life in all its wonder and its joy and its satisfaction. Understand what I am saying. When you know and fear the Lord, you will find that life. and not just here and now, but for eternity. And he is patient. He will wait, believe me, for you to seek him out. So do it. Begin at once to get to know the Lord. For in the end, his judgment seat awaits us all, and only those who fear him will not fall. Let me pray. Lord, I so thank you for these passages and this message that you've given us, because it would be so easy to say, it's a fairy tale. It's a fairy tale. Solomon asks for wisdom and he gets all of these things and riches too. But that's not our lives. That's not what we're like. And we understand from looking at Solomon how much deeper your love goes, how much more you have to offer us. I pray, Lord, that we will not spend our time chasing after the wind. I pray that we will grow in wisdom, beginning in the fear of the Lord and ending in the fear of the Lord, and that all of our life will be spent in reverence and humility before you. In the name of Christ, who grew in wisdom, amen. I'm going to turn it over to Pastor Angela for communion at this point.